Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to my Blog Talk Radio show, Live Your Music. I'm Margot Joy Denader, and I'm broadcasting from Marin County, California. My guest for today's show is Chuck Ballinger. When people ask Chuck Ballinger, "What do you do?" he often doesn't know how to answer. He realizes most people want to know what he does for a living, but this is rarely his top priority. Chuck says he's always been self-employed as a designer and builder, but his business only provides him with the means to do many other things, things that may not pay as well. Chuck has written for over 10 national magazines specializing in travel, building, and scuba diving. His art has been seen in numerous art shows with his unique line of social commentary paintings, and he's always been active in community affairs, serving on several boards and committees here in Marin County. Chuck's travels have taken him to over 60 countries. Many of those trips were on assignment as a travel and scuba diving journalist. In 2001, he wrote the book, An American Odyssey, Underwater Odyssey, 50 Dives in 50 States, and it chronicles his journey to discover America both above and below the surface in each American state. This personal quest took over a year to complete. To find out more about Chuck, you can visit his websites, www.charlesballinger.com, that's charlesballinger.com, and also Dive 50 States, D-I-V-E, number 50, states.com. Welcome, Chuck.
Well, thank you, Margo. Appreciate being here.
I am so happy to talk with you today about your book and your dives in 50 states and your adventures and your art and all the different things that you do.
Well, thanks. I think after having read your book, The Art of Living a Life You Love, there's clearly a tie-in to the project I did a while back and really stepping back and saying, you know, do I want to do the same occupational work every day for the rest of my life, or do I want to take a break and do something I really love? So that's where that began to come about.
Yeah. Well, you know, I totally get what you're talking about this whole thing about not being able to be described as one thing. And I have a feeling that probably almost everyone, if not everyone, who's listening to the show today is someone like that, that when they go to a party and someone asks, "What do you do?" they can't just say one thing. And I'd like you to talk about that experience a little bit right now and how you feel about that.
Well, Margo, it probably reflects a little bit about our society, and it is very conscious and aware of what people do to make a living. And I've always looked at making a living as primarily a means of opening up other outlets that, as you said, maybe not pay as well, but provide you with a litany of other experiences. And I feel in the end game, it's all about creating great experiences and memories. And hopefully when it comes down to the ninth inning or 18th hole, you can still remember all those great memories. But that's what I've always had as a primary focus of my life, to create interesting memories and sort of build up a repertoire of different experiences. I once read a book about the protean lifestyle, spelled P-R-O-T-E-A-N. And it's all about encompassing different types of experiences and not just going down one path in life, say as a writer, an electrician, or a teacher, what have you. You try to take in, almost like the movie Little Big Man, you try to take in a lot of different avenues and at the end, hopefully, get a broader outlook on what it's all about.
Protean. Okay. I hadn't heard of that before. I actually had read it in part of your book, so I was familiar with it from that. But before reading your book and before talking with you about this, I had never heard of that. And it makes so much sense to what I'm talking about in my book, about the art of living a life you love isn't about just finding one job in accounting or in an office in a cubicle and just being there and then going to parties and telling people, well, I'm an accountant or I'm a lawyer or I'm a doctor or I'm a whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because I met you in Toastmasters, which I love, in our Toastmasters club in Mill Valley, 1441 Toastmasters. And thanks to Ed and Eleanor Sotelo starting that club back in 1980, it's amazing the people that I've met over the last, well, it's almost 10 years for me. I joined in December of 2004, so I'm coming up on my 10-year anniversary with Toastmasters and at that particular club at Roundtable Pizza. So pizza always reminds me of speaking, and it reminds me of listening and evaluating and leading meetings. And but I've met so many amazing people at that club, and some of the people stay for a long time. Some of the people are newer, like you and Marcia Pritchard, and great additions to the club, by the way. And what I've noticed, though, is that the people that join our particular Toastmasters club, I would say probably a lot of them are what you're talking about, this protean thing where they're not one thing.
Yeah, I've noticed that too, which is a big surprise because going into Toastmasters, I thought it would be kind of young up-and-comers in the business world who just wanted to talk to business groups in a more effective way, and it was anything but. So I found the speeches that people give are very enlightening, very interesting, and all over the map. And I think probably one of my first speeches, I may have spoken about the sort of genesis of this project. And I think I heard one of your radio blog shows once, and you were talking about how you used to be a hairdresser and that
mm-hmm.
you needed to step away from that to find your true path and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And in one of the speeches I gave, I spoke about a book I read a long time ago when I was in college called Walk Across America. And it was about a fellow by the name of Peter Jenkins who was very disenchanted with life in America. And he was going to move to Europe or somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody said, hey, you really don't know what America's all about. You know, why don't you go out there and find out what you're talking about first? So he and his dog Cooper set off. This is about the early 70s. And they walked across America, literally,
mm-hmm.
went down to New York, to New Orleans, and then all the way across. And two great books, bestseller back in 72 or somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I read that book and was quite inspired by it. Began the magazine writing, went to South Africa, where we spent a month going up and down the coast, and realized that it was not so much about the individual experiences of diving with white sharks or what have you. It was
mm-hmm.
about this compilation of different dives and different having lunch with the Zulus and game drives with lions and zebras. So the concept of this dive safari came about. And then not long after that, I decided, well, maybe I'll try the Peter Jenkins sort of thing. So I started interviewing people who had golfed in every state or been to every stadium in the country or played tennis and, you know, these kinds of things where people took their passion and
mm-hmm.
decided to set up a sort of a personal quest or journey. And in doing so, I think there's a lot of benefits from that. You can test yourself. You can leave the status quo. You can kind of put yourself out there where things happen in an unexpected way. And I think when you do that, life is kind of full of surprises. And that's sort of the magic of undertaking one of these kinds of challenges. So the book was kind of a hybrid between, on the one hand, scuba diving, which is pretty cut and dry, very crazy places I dived in, like nuclear missile silos and underground caverns and caves, et cetera, et cetera. But it was more about this sort of personal journey, this challenge. And in the book, I tried to, you know, look at it from the perspective of really what you write about in your book of stepping aside and following your passion and incorporating it into a kind of a personal quest. So that's how that all came about. But getting back to the Toastmasters, yeah, it's a great venue for talking about these kinds of things. And I think in general, people, including yourself, really get into some nitty-gritty things that are quite interesting.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I love about Toastmasters is that I joined it originally because I wanted to be a better communicator. I wanted to be able to talk to groups of people about my book. Originally was I was actually at the time working on writing my book, and my coach at the time, Leslie Keenan, had said, "Well, you do know that you're going to have to talk about your book, don't you?" And I thought, "Oh my God, no, I didn't know that." I thought I'd just write the book and people could learn from my life lessons that have helped me love my life, you know, and learn about the secrets of our success, and you know, that would be that. And then I thought, well, you know, I guess maybe all these years of hearing Earl Nightingale and Wayne Dyer and other people talk about Toastmasters, maybe I need to try that. So I made it a goal that I was going to go to one Toastmaster meeting before I turned 51, while I was still 50, in other words. And I did, and I went to the first meeting, and I just, Tim Driscoll, Anne Marie Clark, and Eleanor Sotelo, and Ed Sotelo, all of those people, Ann Huntington, they were all there at the meeting, and they invited us to a holiday party the following week. I joined right away, Chuck. It was just so amazing, the people that were there, how inspiring it was. And communication's always been one of my top values. It's also one of the chapters in my book because it's such an incredibly important part of enjoying your life, is how you communicate first with yourself and then with other people and then also with the universe. And that's what I love about it. It's about communication. It's about learning to be a better speaker, yes, but it's also about learning to be a better listener, learning to be an evaluator, and learning from all the different experiences that the people have. It's amazing. It's so much fun going every week. You never know what people are going to talk about, and it's always interesting, and it's always fun.
Well, at the risk of sounding like an advertisement for Toastmasters, I agree, and I think it's also another benefit that I went into it and I joined right away has to do with being evaluated. And I think a lot of times in public speeches, what have you, I'd done in the past, or just speaking up sometimes in a large group, I wasn't always sure how it would come across. And sometimes I had some doubts afterwards. Well, did that make sense? Did I keep to my point? Did I digress here? Did I forget a point, et cetera, et cetera? And so I think one of the benefits in the group is that you get this feedback. And to me, that's probably one of the biggest benefits, to get the evaluations and see if, in fact, your points were made properly. And if they weren't, you can tweak it and next time around do a better job. And I think that's kind of inspiring.
Yeah, very much so. Well, I want to hear more about your book, about the 50 dives and the 50 states, and maybe tell us a little bit more about what it was like. I mean, I can't even imagine going on a trip where you're driving all over the United States. So tell us a little bit about how you did that.
Well, one of the ironic aspects of it was that anybody who knew me at the time would realize that I hate long drives. I drove across to California about 30 years ago and kept putting it off because I just, something I've never really liked about being on a freeway for 6, 7 hours at a stretch. So I always had this kind of thing where I didn't like to drive, and here I end up driving 16,000 miles on this trip. So it's those kinds of little things that you overcome that I think are kind of interesting. It took a lot of planning, obviously. I think in anything like this, you have to do a heck of a lot of research. And the first question I ever got was, I always get, is, how did you find dives in places like Kansas and Nebraska and some of these inland states? And that's the fun part. That's where I found underground lead mines that you're literally diving above the city hall or a stoplight, you know, 60 feet down underground in some lead mine cave, or go to states like North Dakota and be greeted by the governor, who is a diver, was a diver, and came along with his entourage. So all these things would sort of unfold, but it did require quite a bit of planning.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fun too. You know, it all worked out. It was when I went off on a section dive, which would be about six or seven states at a time.
Mm-hmm.
It would have to be coordinated, obviously, so that you have all these things set up in different states, and you can't dawdle in one state and miss the next one. But there were a lot of aspects about that, including self-doubts. You know, you're into it about 20, 25 states, and you go, geez, am I really going to finish this? And I think that's part of the challenge of any one of these kinds of personal journeys, though. You sometimes pull back and have moments where you question the sanity of what you're doing and so on and so forth. So I try to write about that a little bit because I think for other people undertaking these kinds of things, it's good to know about the whole inner trip aspect of it. And on the other hand, you're writing in large part for scuba divers, so you have to talk about what it's like to dive 130 feet into a missile silo that was cranked up for the Cuban Missile Crisis to hit, I think it was St. Petersburg.
is that...
Now, talk about insanity.
That's one of the pictures I have in the slideshow for that's on the computers, right? I mean, people that listen on their iPad or their iPhone can't see the slideshow, but if they go to their computer and they click on the link for today's show, they can see the slideshow, and the slideshow has a picture of you, I think. Isn't it the one in...
Yeah, that was a nuclear missile silo. What happened was in the early 60s, our great defense establishment built billions of dollars worth of these missile silos. Many of them were in Texas, but they were all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
And they were nuclear armed. And very shortly after they were all activated, they became deactivated because the system of launching, which in this case was below the ground and the doors opened up and the missiles would fly off to Russia, became obsolete, almost like our missile silos we have out in the Marin Headlands and, you know, really all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
So there's these silos all over Texas, and a lot of people have moved into them and made it underground houses out of them. I went into a few of those to see how people were living in these. They would have windows that were actually like flat-screen TVs with views of tranquil forest and stuff, even though they were 100 feet underground. So,
wow.
Yeah, very, very bizarre stuff. And that was really the goal of the trip, to show that scuba diving isn't just about being on a coral reef with pretty little colored fish swimming around you. There's so many other aspects to it, whether it be wreck diving or oil rig diving or diving for fossils or any number of things. And so that was what the project was really about, you know, this discovering the diversity and showing the diversity in the book of just so many different kinds of scuba diving trips you can take. Because a lot of people get into the sport and they drop out of it because they feel they have to fly off to the Cayman Islands or something.
Mm-hmm.
When there's great diving right in their backyard. But as I said, the other part of the trip was really to meet people from all over the country, and everybody was very gracious. And I had a number of radio interviews at the time, and it was a real hoot to get out there and do the project. So,
well, one of the things I remember reading in your book was that some of the people that you met and about how that was an incredible aspect of it. And you must have met so many different people during this trip. What did you learn about going to so many different places? What did you bring out of that?
Well, Margo, I'll tell you, it's kind of funny because coming originally from Connecticut and... I know you don't get political on your show and stuff, but
mm-hmm.
I had certain misgivings about what it'd be like to dive with people from Mississippi and different parts of the country. And this was before 9/11. This was the year 2000, and when things got pretty politicized in the country. And
mm-hmm.
you know, again, you can drive across the country as I had maybe four or five times before I did this project, and you're on the freeways all the time, and you really mm-hmm. don't get to meet a lot of these people. But what I learned at the time was that everybody was incredibly gracious. There's a fraternity, I guess you'd say, sorority, whatever, of people that engage and have a passion in the same thing. And so that elevates itself above other considerations, namely politics. And so, you know, there was no, it was just a very welcoming, gracious time. I think people got into the idea of promoting their state. I think one of the pictures you have was with the governor of North Dakota, and I still have that T-shirt, and people go, you can dive in North Dakota? So, but that, you know, he was just one character in many who was just amazing. We dove at about 10 knots an hour or more down the Missouri River, and you sort of drop down about 20 feet to the bottom of the river, and it looks like you're on a runway on an airport, and everything's flying past you, and you have to kind of watch out you don't hit a tree or some big boulder, but you're soaring along the bottom of this river, and we have floats at the top, and some people in a boat overhead would make sure that the floats were not getting run over by the boat and what have you. And towards the end of the dive, we all came up, and the governor was missing. He was missing for about 10 minutes, and we couldn't see his float. We didn't know where he was. We didn't know whether we'd run him over or whether he got stuck in a tree. And one guy on the boat was about ready to call in the state helicopter, the local guard, if you will, to try to locate the governor, because they thought he might have gone, vanished in this deep river. And fortunately, after quite a while, he popped up, and we didn't lose the governor of North Dakota. But a lot of experiences like that were kind of fun. Looking
well, you
back.
Know, I was laughing about it, and I was thinking that if I didn't already know that he had turned out to be okay, because I read that in the book, I wouldn't have been laughing, because I would have been going, oh, my God, because like I did when I was reading that part in the book, oh, my God, did they really lose him? Did they ever get him back?
Yeah.
You know?
So, well, it gave me a start, because that was only about halfway through the project, and I thought, oh, geez, here I go to have this personal odyssey, and I end up killing the governor of North Dakota. But all was well, it ended well, and we...
Yeah, now it just makes a really good story and a great picture, you know. So, I just wanted to say that the time is flying by really fast. We've only got about 7 minutes left, and just so that I won't forget to do it later, I wanted to mention that my guest for next week's show for October 1st, Wednesday the 1st, is going to be Merle Saunders Jr., and we're going to be talking about his life in music and about his dad, Merle Saunders, what it was like growing up with his dad, and also about Phoenix Live in San Rafael, which is where he is now. That's where he's spending his time and his talents. And I'll be posting that on my Facebook and Twitter, and you can also sign up for my e-newsletters at margojoydenader.com to receive updates on who's coming up next and when they'll be on. Get links for the previous shows as well, because all of the shows are available as on-demand episodes, and you can listen to them anytime, anywhere around the world, not just here in California. And I wanted to get back into talking about your art, though. I put in the slideshow, I put one of my favorites of your paintings, and if you could tell us a little bit about that, that would be fun.
Well, they say that in order to be successful in art, you have to develop your own line, and I did a lot of traditional landscapes, et cetera, those sorts of European street scenes, et cetera. But I found myself starting to do these social and political commentary paintings that some of them you'd see on the site are takeoffs of existing paintings. I think the one you chose to illustrate was a Van Gogh painting called Cafe at Night. And I get these strange thoughts now and then, and when I see a classic painting, and that one I thought, well, if you saw that particular scene today, you'd probably see all these Kentucky Fried Chickens and Pizza Huts and Burger Kings and all this other stuff. So I painted the original painting, and then I inserted, you know, all the various Baskin-Robbins and so on and so forth. So it sort of changes Van Gogh's original concept. And another one, I had Vincent in the Kaiser Permanente waiting room with his bandaged ear, and I thought, wouldn't it be interesting if he went into Kaiser to have it fixed? And so I have him sitting in the waiting room, and he's reading Psychology Today, and on the back it says, "Free Your Inner Artist," and somebody had ripped off his Starry Night painting. So all this is quite detailed in the painting. Mm-hmm. And on the front of Psychology Today, the magazine he's reading, it says, "Twisted?" question mark.
Yeah.
He's kind of looking out with his perplexed look. And so it's really fun to kind of modify these classic paintings. Another one was American Gothic, you know, where the farmer's there with his pitchfork. And mm-hmm. I think I did this during the economic downturn. I've got the farmer holding a "Will Work for Food" sign, and his farmhouse in the back is being foreclosed on. And so you can take a lot of these old paintings and have fun with them. And then also coming up with, I'd say most of them are originals, where I've got an Indian Border Patrol guard on his horse, and the Mayflower crew is coming ashore, and he's about to ask them for their papers. And, you know, things like this that are designed, they're meant to be humorous, but they also have a little point.
Well, and people can see these paintings we're talking about, and also many more of your paintings on your website at charlesballinger.com, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Thanks for the plug. And by the way, I wanted to say that your book, I think, hits to the point of a lot of what we've been talking about, and finding that inner passion and really acting on it and going with it and having the confidence to, you know, step out of the box and try something new. Everybody I talked about that had embarked on these kinds of journeys, or just what you're talking about, finding what your passion is and living it, I've yet to find too many people who have said it didn't work out, because it's, you know, in part it's like the old expression, very few people lie on their deathbed and say, gee, I wish I had, you know, worked at my job more and sort of taken less time off. You know, generally it's the opposite, that people do want to go for what they really have a passion for and not just punch the time clock every day.
Yeah, and one of the things that I've realized, too, that's why I call my show Live Your Music, is because Wayne Dyer's always said, don't die with your music still in you. And to me, what that means, it doesn't mean necessarily music, although it can be, but it means to whatever you feel inspired to do, what you feel called to do, the things that give your life meaning or that you're just curious about and that you just feel you need to do. And in my opinion, for me and for most of the people that I've observed that are doing this, there are many different things that call them. And to allow yourself to do that, even to just do part of it, makes you feel so much more alive. That's the whole point.
I agree.
It's about feeling alive. It's about enjoying life, enjoying your time on this beautiful planet we call Earth, as Earl Nightingale called it, our holiday on Earth. And the way to enjoy it the most is to do what you love, and to love what you love. That's the thing. And then and also the connection with other people. Well, we're almost out of time, and I just want to remind everyone out there to listen to the music that you hear calling you, and to be willing to go for it. And if you need to, find a guide, find somebody who can help you. A coach or someone that's a mentor. Right, Chuck?
That's right. Thank you,
yeah.
Marga.
Yeah. Well, we have just a few seconds left, and I just want to say thank you again, Chuck, for being on my show, for writing your book, and for all the inspiration you give us every week in Toastmasters as well.
Well, and you too. I'm looking forward to seeing you at the next meeting.
Yeah. Bye for now, everyone. I will be talking to you next week on Wednesday. Have a wonderful week, everyone. Bye.